Lutheran Church. And in order to do that, we have to be able to examine what's old about the churches, what's different in terms of what we've been and what we hope to be. We realize that we all have different histories. Each of the three bodies that are uniting now into the New Lutheran Church. And we recognize that that history is a rather complicated one, and we realize that the Lutheran churches are composed of immigrant groups that came from Europe, each of them coming from state churches that were not sustaining churches for the new groups that came here, but as the immigrants group, the groups came, they each had to start their own church body. And they did a good job of that. They saw to it that the word and the sacraments were provided for their people. They saw to it that there were educational agencies created for their people, caring agencies. Each one of them has a vigorous history of attending to that which was essential to the life of the church. At the same time, we realize how ghettoized the churches were in their original state. They didn't have a need to communicate with other groups. They didn't have a pressure on them to be united. They didn't have the same kind of communications that we have today. They didn't have the same kind of transportation that we have today. And as they settled in, some of them really kept their own ethnic character. At the same time, we recognize that this came in different periods in our history. We think of the history of the Lutheran Church in America as being dating back to pre-revolutionary days. We think of that as being a long and distinguished history for the church. We also recognize that the later groups that came, both for the American Lutheran Church and what is now the AELC, it's had its origin in the Missouri Synod, that it really comes quite a bit later. But as the groups developed, each of them developed a certain kind of character. I'm not an historian, so I'm not going to try and date all of this for you or give you all of the details, but just to give you a feel for which, whatever the three Lutheran separate bodies bring to the scene. The Lutheran Church in America has the longer history and dates back through a number of mergers, and so finally we have the merging of 30 different synods. Now those synods all have proud histories, and every one of them provided their own seminary. Not each one of the synods had its own seminary, but many of them did. They were smaller seminaries. And they provided their own ministerium through these particular seminaries. And then also developed a strong sense of identity with the ministerium that was its own. Many of the people in the synods in the LCA grew up within that synod, were trained within that synod as pastors, and then served within that particular synod. Now, in the course of time, each one of these synods developed a great deal of, a strong power base for themselves. And the presidents of those synods, and later on the bishops of those synods, had considerable authority. In time, through mergers, the LCA, as it developed, developed a very strong sense of corporation. And the LCA today is very proud of the fact that it has brought together these 30 synods that have these diverse histories and really became a church, the Lutheran Church in America. So they have this strong sense of identity within the synods, and yet at the same time a strong sense of church. The American Lutheran Church, as we know it today, is a merger of two ethnic groups, the Norwegian Lutheran Church, and that was known as the Evangelical Lutheran Church, or ELC, and the old American Lutheran Church, which is a merger of several German groupings. Now, in the American Lutheran Church, there's a strong sense of family. They have a real strong sense of the fact that they belong together. They came together as the Norwegians, and they came together as the Germans, and then they brought about this marriage between the Norwegians and the Germans, which was a marriage that was consummated about the same time that the LCA was effected, that the LCA as we know it today, back in 1960. Well, the American Lutheran Church has been able to survive all kinds of struggles, internal problems, because of this good sense of family. And it was still consummating this marriage that it brought off in 1960 between Germans and Norwegians. Sometimes there were tensions with that, but they were able to bring about with this sense of family. And the bishop of the American Lutheran Church is kind of a paterfamilias. He's the father of the family, a strong, strong figure. And there's a strong sense of loyalty to the bishop of the American Lutheran Church. And yet at the same time, the American Lutheran Church has a strong feeling for its individual congregations. The congregations are very strong in terms of their rights and their privileges. So it's a little different from the kind of outlook that you have in the LCA, where the synod is so strong. The AELC has its origin in the Missouri Synod, and perhaps you know that the story of the Missouri Synod is that it is a strong mixture of piety and orthodoxy that took a great deal of pride in the fact that it wanted to keep the right doctrine or the right teaching. But the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod also was a vigorous church and grew to be a large synod. It was only one synod. It was not a merger of many synods. It was not a merger through the years, but it started in Missouri and went across the country and developed itself as a rather evangelistic church. It did a good job in that area, but then it came to that moment when it decided that it was going to decide what the teachings of the church should be. And that was kind of a violation of its own constitution. Its own constitution prescribed that the synod could only be advisory, and that the authority of the church was really resting within the individual congregations. Where the people were gathered around word and sacrament, there was the church, and the synod could only be advisory to the congregations. Well, at that moment when, strangely enough, the Missouri Synod imported somebody from the Norwegian Lutheran Church, and by the name of Preuss also, and Dr. Preuss wrote a statement that he called a statement of principles, and that was circulated among the church to describe how the church would have to interpret the scripture. And that, of course, was for some people in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod a violation of our understanding of what it means to be a Lutheran. And consequently, there was an uprising within the Missouri Synod, and as you know, seminary left, the Seminex was created, and eventually there was the suspension of district presidents, and with that, leaving of some 250 congregations from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and they then comprised the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches, with that there are four synods. It was small enough to be one synod, really, but at the time there was the expectation that many congregations would be leaving the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And that never materialized, and the only the 250 left. But the AELC then brings with it a strong sense of congregational autonomy. And there is a difference then again between the AELC's understanding of authority in the church and the ALC and the LCA. Now, perhaps I should stop at this point just to reflect on that a little bit and to recognize that each one of these groups then perceived the other in a somewhat different way. If you talk to people in the ALC and the AELC, they would say, well, the LCA is hierarchical. They have this strong sense of the bishop with authority on the top, and that's hierarchical. Well, then you talk to the people in the LCA, and they would say, well, the people in the ALC, and the people particularly in the ALC, they're congregationalists. It's congregationalism. They don't want anything on top as far as the church is concerned. They want to be able to assert their rights, leave any time they want to, like the left of Missouri Synod, and so on. And probably the view of the ALC is somewhere in between that. We see this sense of strong national structure, but then this also need for congregational autonomy. Well, what's the new Lutheran Church going to be like? Is it going to be hierarchical, or is it going to be congregational in its outlook? Well, there have been very careful efforts on the part of the CNLC to examine those differences and to look at ways in which the new church should express itself. And of course, what the CNLC came up with was that the New Testament understanding of the church is that the church is where people of God are gathered about the word in the sacraments. There the authority of the church lies. And of course, that could be at different levels. It's in the congregational level. It's also true at a synodical level. And it's also true at the national church level. Each of them are expressions of the people of God or the body of Christ. And therefore, no one of them exists apart from the other. And the church then should think of itself as being interdependent. And that is a word that the church wants to use over and over again, that the church is interdependent. The congregation being dependent upon the synod being dependent upon the congregation, and vice versa, the national church being dependent upon the synods being dependent upon the congregations again. So that's something that we look for in the New Lutheran Church, and expressing that over and over again, and sensing this need not to be apart from one another, but to be dependent upon one another. No one single view of the church should prevail, but all should be dependent upon the other. Now we're going to be looking at how the design of the new church will take place and how it will express itself at the different levels. We'll be talking about that at length tomorrow, so we'll hold our discussion of that till then. But to think of it now in those terms, when you realize that the churches have talked about themselves in different ways. The ALC has usually thought of itself as being a union of congregations, and the LCA think of itself as a church comprised of congregations and pastors, and they're the pastors have would have the equal authority with the congregations, and that would be somewhat different in the new church. But what's interesting to us is to see that as we are trying to develop ourselves in this new union of congregations, Lutheran congregations, that this is not a new experience for us, but there's been the many mergers that have occurred over the years, and to realize that as the church has had to do this, they've had to go through the process of writing documents to explain their views one to the other. And to think of how painful a process that was in the past, but then to think of how well that's been going at the present time. The CNLC has been a remarkable experience. When we tried to put together a new Lutheran church, I remember that one of the biggest questions that came up was, what's the name of the new Lutheran church going to be, you know? And actually, you think of all of the detail that the CNLC had to wrestle with in order to come to the moment that we are, that the name of the church was really a small item. But yet it's because we've gone through so many of these that people are interested. I remember Martin Marty suggesting, rather naively, but giving the name the next Lutheran Church, you know, that this might be only temporary too. We would hope that eventually we could effect the kind of union that also would include another large segment, and that would be a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Although at this moment, that doesn't look like that could happen. But I was at a meeting in St. Louis about our Pan-Lutheran social ministries this spring. And the banquet speaker of the evening was Dr. Ralph Bowman, the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He was supposed to talk about his view from where he was sitting, what's going to happen with the new Lutheran Church. And at that moment, there was a lot of talk about the fact that the LCA was quite unhappy with what was happening. The LCA bishops were raising all kinds of issues, and there were some people who were talking about postponing the merger, some people being against a merger rather than talk about the new Lutheran church. There was even talk about being against a merger. Well, Dr. Bowman said, well, from what he was hearing, there was a 50-50 chance of it happening, but when all was said and done, and push came to shove, he believed that that it would happen. But then he said, but as he viewed what had to take place, what was transpiring in the CNLC, he was just amazed at how much had been done, how much homework had already been done, how much had been achieved by way of compromise, of working through new ideas, of getting it all together. He just thought it was absolutely fantastic. He said when he thought of how difficult it was to even get a revision of bylaws in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, he had to stand in awe of the achievement of the CNLC. And I think that's true for all of us. But then I think that there are also some things that we should recognize that have paved the way for where we're at. That it's not all entirely new. When we think of some of the things that have happened in the past already that made it possible for us to work together and to achieve unity without the union of the churches, I think that there's a lot that we can say has helped to create this new day for us. Well, in the past, there were efforts that were almost forced upon us for several reasons. One was that grew out of World War I already, and that was Lutheran World Relief. And then again with World War II, Lutheran World Relief. So there was an effort to do something about that. And the creation of the National Lutheran Council. And the National Lutheran Council was a vehicle for the working together of the Lutheran churches that were in existence at that time. And you remember that we didn't have just then the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America. Also, the Missouri Synod participated in some of that work, although it was not a member of the National Lutheran Council. But there was the work of Lutheran World Relief. There was the work of also the chaplaincies, and then also campus ministry. That was another important ministry that grew up after both wars. And that was an important work that we got into, particularly after World War II. The National Campus Ministry was a very important ministry of the church. Well, then you remember that it was decided that we would create a new vehicle, and that was LCUSA, Lutheran Council of the United States of America, in which the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod did want to become a full participant. And at its insistence, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod said there should be some concern for theological differences, or what might also be our theological unity. And so that was created, and it functioned very well for a time. The Lutheran Council was exceedingly vigorous in creating new ministries among us and joint ministries among us. That was a very exciting time for us, particularly for us who were still in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and made possible all kinds of things that hadn't been done before. And then, of course, with 1969, when the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod did elect Preuss, there was a strange convention in which Preuss was elected as a very conservative candidate for the presidency of Missouri Synod. But in that same convention, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod declared fellowship with the American Lutheran Church. But it was under a dark cloud right from the beginning. Dr. Preuss never gave himself fully to that, in spite of the fact that his own cousin was president of the American Lutheran Church. It was a very sad scene for many of us that the symbol of their unity was a cup of coffee in the O'Hare Airport. And it was a very bad scene. We didn't have a great celebration to celebrate that occasion. But that meant that was going to be on the wane. Well, also, LCUSA was on the wane as far as the Missouri Synod was concerned. After 1969, they start withdrawing from many of the activities of the Lutheran Council. Nonetheless, many things had been already done in joint activity by the Lutheran churches. On top of that, the social ministry of the church had also been joint operation of the three churches over the years. I can remember that that was forced on us too, in a way. I was serving an agency of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in the Chicago area, and the United Way forced our hand. We had to get together. Here we had all these different Lutheran groups coming to the United Way, trying to get a buck here and a buck there, and they said, you better get your act together and decide who you are first, and then come and talk to us. So we had to create in Chicago what was called the Lutheran Charities, and we discovered we could collect junk together. We could do all kinds of things together. And then as the agencies got closer together, many of them became pan-Lutheran agencies. Their boards became represented by all the different Lutheran groups. And we did find ways of working and serving together. So that helped considerably. Now, unfortunately, we see that Missouri Synod is pulling out of some of the agencies, and we hope that that will not be general. What was heartwarming for me in the meeting that we had in St. Louis in the spring was that social ministry agency of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod made it clear that it wanted to continue to work in this fashion. And even Dr. Bowman gave a speech that we had heard two years before, but he said that the way in which the Church Fathers and the Missouri Synod had found to deal with this was to say, unio in sacris, cooperatio in externis. That is, union in sacred things. There we have to have perfect union, but we can cooperate in external things. So that's a way of getting around it. Well, we like to say that we bend the rules once in a while and go beyond just the externals too. But I would like to say that the great impetus to what we are becoming in the New Lutheran Church, and what is new about the New Lutheran Church, is the fact that there had also been a great Lutheran Renaissance beginning in the 50s. In Europe it was earlier, but it came to America in the 50s, and that this Lutheran Renaissance took place in our schools, particularly in the seminaries, where there's new understanding of Luther. We're uncovering Luther like we hadn't before, and our Lutheran seminaries became more biblical and more Lutheran than they had ever been in their histories. I had the opportunity to write an article about this past year, in which I noted the fact that the immigrant churches brought with them their theologies, of course, and the understanding of their church fathers, but all of them colored and coloring Lutheran teaching and view of their own ethnic understanding of Luther. But then now, with the Lutheran Renaissance, there was this fresh understanding of Luther. Of course, the translation of the Luther works into English, 50-some volumes, that was a great boon to us. And it helped us to go back to what it means to be Lutheran. And that is this understanding of the centrality of the teaching of the doctrine of justification by faith through grace. That's very, very important to us. In all of us understanding that to be Lutheran means that we take our place under the Augsburg Confession. And so that when it came time to put together something as an expression of what it means to be Lutheran in the New Lutheran Church, that the CNLC came to a quick decision that we don't need some new Lutheran confession. The Presbyterians thought they needed that and got into all kinds of trouble because they, trying to express themselves, made for all kinds of difficulties for them. But the one thing that we hold in common is that we are sworn to the Lutheran confessions. Now for us, that is the understanding that we hold the ecumenical creeds, of course, to be very important. But then the Augsburg Confession to be a proper exposition of our understanding of how we are to read the scriptures. Namely, that all of the scriptures and have to be read in the understanding of that one central teaching, namely that we are justified by faith through grace in the Lord Jesus Christ. We also say that the other Lutheran confessions, the Apology of the Augsburg Confession, the small catechism, the large catechism, the small caldalicals and the treatise, and the formula of Concord are also to be understood as historical interpretations of the faith as far as we understand it. However, we also understand that all of those outside of the Augsburg Confession are really historical documents that have to be seen in the light of the ongoing discussions of that moment. And that as we interpret the scriptures today, we do so more in the light of the Augsburg Confession because our relationship with the Reformed Church and our relationship with the Roman Catholic Church is altogether different today than it was at the time of the writings of those documents. So the issues are different, and therefore we want to see them as historical documents. But the very fact that we could say we are the church as we begin was very, very important. That we have this common confession, and that we stand under the scriptures and the ecumenical creeds and the Augsburg Confession as one. That gave great impetus to what we had to do. One could imagine that at another moment in our history, probably we would have been spending the 2 years that the CNLC did in trying to achieve some kind of documentation that we could all agree to. But here we could say we are agreed to begin with. I had suggested that we should have declared ourselves to be the church in the beginning and then tried to put it together afterwards. My congregation is supporting a young man who is an assistant to the bishop in the Christian church in Zaire. In Zaire, 90% of the people are Christians. It's hard for us to imagine. We think of us being a Christian nation, but think of 90% of the people are Christian. But now they've become Christian, within the last century. And they became Christians largely by virtue of the fact they were Christianized by immigrant mission societies that came to them and made Christians out of them and made them Christians in probably the most fundamental sense that we can imagine. But they are not all then of the same brand. Some of them are Baptists and some are Methodists and some come out of the Christian church. But it's interesting that when they decided that they should become one Christian church, that they should send the assistant to the bishop to come to America to study in a Lutheran seminary. And the reason that they wanted him to study in a Lutheran seminary is because they were in contact with the Christians from Tanzania. Now, that's supported largely by the American Lutheran Church. And they were so impressed with what the Lutheran Christians had to say. So they wanted this young man to come and study at Lutheran School of Theology at Chicago, where he is receiving his doctorate. And while he was there, then my congregation was sustaining him so that he could go back and teach those Christians how to be Lutheran Christians. Well, it's going to be quite an impact when we think of the connection then that we have with the Church of Zaire. We're really happy about that. Well, that young man said that the first thing that they did was to declare themselves the Christian church. Now they are going to develop the creed and say, this is what we have in common and this is how we're going to work it together. And I said, that's not new in Africa. That's the way they do things in Africa. They achieve a consensus first and then work out the details. And it would have been nice if we had been able to do that too. But in a sense, we have. I think that it is a remarkable achievement that has been accomplished by the CNLC in helping us to see ourselves as a new Lutheran church because we are one in the Lord Jesus Christ. And that we can now throw out some of the excess baggage that we've been carrying around. And we can also develop the larger view of what it means to be the church rather than to have this myopic view that some of us have had. We all have to say that we come with a certain bent on this and that, and now here's our chance to understand ourselves anew and to find fresh language for talking about the church and particularly about the ministry of the church. We'll be talking about the ministry of the church on Wednesday, but and that should be an exciting thing for us to see, because I think that's going to be probably one of the freshest things that we are doing. Now I think I'll call it quits at this point for my talking and let you express yourselves and how you view this in terms of what you see as new in the Lutheran Church, or questions that you'd like to raise, or just comments that you would like to make. Yes.
Mine's kind of a question and comment together, in that I grew up in the Missouri Synod, and the whole idea of a merger seems exciting and interesting and all that to me. And I've heard that some people that have gone through a lot of merger, especially in the LCA process, are sort of tired of going through mergers, would like to get on with the church and not keep doing mergers. And do those people that have LCA backgrounds here, is that a strong feeling, or is that something that somebody said?
LCA people? You're an LCA people? All right.
To us, it's hard to tell the difference between LCA and ALC or Missouri Synod. So to us, I mean, we're very much in favor of the two. I think that, I hope that they won't let little differences become big differences.
Maybe I was just hearing more professional church people that were tired of going through the sign up on members.
You know that the LCA has a part of its constitution that it is committed to Lutheran Union, and it's committed also to other ecumenical relations, but it is committed to Lutheran Union. And do you want to make a comment here?
I'm working with the Synod Planning Group in Seattle, and we're a very ecumenical group. We don't even have a division, but they only reverse comments do come through the LCA channel, so to speak, but not at our level. So I think that the latest meeting of the new church group can also resolve those differences, and I think
yes.
Look a little bit more hopeful. We're charging here, so it's all happening.
Anyone else on that? The expression in it. Well, I mentioned that the LCA have this commitment to listening, and here I can make a very frank confession. I'm an assistant bishop in the English Synod of the ALC, and sit on the board. I don't get the vote, but I do get the pop off whatever. When Dr. Ewald and Dr. Cohn came in and mentioned the fact that they had issued the call to Lutheran Union, now I was very much upset by that. Let me tell you why. Number one, we knew that the LCA had this commitment. They said, they're all for it. They'll go right for it. They'll say that right away. They'll say, yes, we're ready for it. But Dr. David Price is also a very dear friend and close friend. We were both campus pastors at the University of Minnesota at the same time. And I knew his reluctance to union at that point. I said, Dr. Price is going to say no. At first he did kind of say no to it. And I said, then we're going to be stuck, you know. Then that will be setting back Lutheran Union for a long time to come, because there was a commission which had been created between the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America. They had been working at it for some time, and they thought that they still had 20 years of work ahead of them. You know, they still had, I don't know how many documents to work through and so on. And here we come and rush the whole thing. Of course, the AELC had to have some place to go. You know, we were out there in the wind, snow, and we didn't know what was going to happen to us. We knew we had to go someplace. So I said, well, I thought this was premature. But as it turned out, those fears were unwarranted. I think that we do see a lot of commitment. Now, as a parish pastor and talking with other pastors in the LCA, I would have to say that the ones that I know are eager for the union. They see the advantages to the union. I think as we're talking from the grassroots level, where the pastors and professional workers are, I would say that all of us see great advantages to the union that is to take place. Some people have raised a question about, well, is bigger better? You know, maybe that's part of the question that you're raising too, is it?
Not particularly, but that's an interesting question.
Anybody have feelings about that?
Well, it's certainly a question for me.
Okay, go ahead.
I have liked very much the baggage-free feel of the AELC for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Even though it was sort of forced on the AELC. But, I mean, to go back to Elmer's sermon last night, it's a barefoot church, pretty much. There's no money there. There's no resources there. And it frees people up to do an awful lot of inventive stuff. I mean, Steve Harms with his drama ministry in San Francisco, that couldn't come out of LCA or ALC at this point. And I wonder whether it can come out of a huge megachurch. There are a lot of inventive kinds of ministries that the AELC has enabled just because it doesn't have the resources to stop it, I think, some of the time.
Well, I think that this is very important what you're seeing, because many of the things that we in the AELC experienced during this time, and we didn't create any standing committees, they're always task forces. We had to do a mission in a new way. We created partners in mission, which is probably one of the most exciting things that ever happened to my congregation. When we knew that the things were breaking up in the Missouri Synod for us, Dr. Jim Mayer came and talked to us at our English District Convention at that time and talked about partnering these missions. And he said, we're going to have people that are ready to go, but they have to have somebody pick them up. Now, and I knew at that point, my congregation had been doing extra well in missions. We had had as a goal to send out half of our money for missions, and we had achieved about 40%, and we were ready to go. We had $15,000 extra to do with, besides what we did for Synod and Mission. And I said, well, how much does one of those people cost? And he said at that time it was $15,000. It's a big bargain today, but I said, well, we'll take one. We then contracted with a Seminex graduate to go to New Guinea as an assistant pastor of our Redeemer congregation in Indianapolis. He was our staff person on the New Guinea field, serving together with the Good News Lutheran Church there. Pardon me. That was some happiest thing that ever happened to us mission-wise. He happened to be a good correspondent, would send us letters every month. Whenever we got one of his letters, the mission went up on the Sunday collection. And it was just terrific. He'd write to us and tell about getting diarrhea out in the bush and whatnot. And then, good night, that made the mission come alive. Talked about meeting a black person meeting him as a white person for the first time in the bush, and what this meant, and the communicating of the gospel. That all came alive for us. Well, he served for 10 years in that field, and we grew in that process. And now he's back home, and he's our assistant pastor at home. But we just picked up the Miles, from the LCA couple, was serving an ALC mission out in New Guinea, and it's our Redeemer congregation again that installed them, sent them out there. We'll be supporting them again. This personal contact. With that, we also got the Kukuli Molo I told you about in Zaire. We picked up that thing and said, boy, that's a marvelous thing. He's come to our congregation with his family. You know, you embrace those people, you hold them there. That's a new experience. Well, now we're not going to give that up, you know. That's something we're going to carry into the New Lutheran Church. And there have been all kinds of people who gained through that experience. And we knew we have to keep that alive. That's right. We hope that we can keep that alive. And the fear is that we might lose it. Yes?
Well, I think that shows that various Lutheran churches can learn from each other and
yes.
Stronger, isn't it, if we
Yes, I think that's in this whole CNLC experience. I think that it's just been a refinement of everything that we can give to one another and help one another with. I think that's very true. Okay, any other comments?
Question. Could you, are you going to talk later in the week about your experience as a member of the CNLC? The composition of that 70 is terrifically interesting, I think.
Okay.
A new experience for most white users.
Okay. I'm not a member of the CNLC, by the way. But I think I should have mentioned that what gave it its freshness, too, this approach, was that the CNLC took seriously what is being proposed as quotas then for the New Lutheran Church. That in the composition of our assemblies in the New Lutheran Church, whether it's in the synod or whether it's in its commissions and its councils, that we look for a distribution that would be 60% laity and 40% clergy. That there would be 50% men, 50% women, 10% being people of minority, whether by color or language. When the CNLC then met for the first time, it was apparent from the outset that the professionals were not going to be creating this new church. Those people, the lay people, the ladies, the men, the people of minority, they cherished their vote, those 70 votes. Now, one thing also has to be noted is how serious they were about the calling that they had to be serving on this commission. Their absenteeism was negligible. They almost had 100% cooperation just about every time. It was rare for people to be missing. They were there, and they cherished their votes. These lay people were not intimidated by bishops or professors. They really thought the things through. That was very, very, very clear. And that was clear on all of the issues that came before them. I think what was interesting in that process, however, was one that almost could have unraveled the whole thing, a strange thing, and that was the selection of the site. And you saw all the flap about the site selection. Now, the reason that got so important was because there were some people who were trying to say, see, look at the commission, it can't function properly. Look at how they're doing this site selection. Well, the site selection, I got a whole story to tell about that. I'm from Indianapolis, and I don't know whether you ever heard that Indianapolis was in the running, but at one point, I thought we were seriously in the running. That was in the very beginning. And what happened was that the site committee was given, the first task force was given the instruction that they should look at about 12 cities. And unfortunately, that particular task force did not do its homework well. And it only looked at a few cities, and then came in with a recommendation that maybe they ought to have a holding action until a couple years down the pike, and then they could make a better selection, so that they should keep the offices then in Philadelphia and in Minneapolis for the time being. Well, the CNLC wasn't about to hear that. You know, they want to get this church going. And consequently, they created a new task force and gave them the assignment, but then kind of tied their hands by saying, you got to do it between this city and that city and that city. And once again, there was not a sorting out of the cities that might have been good site selections. And consequently, they came back and they got their hands slapped too, because the commission then, as a committee of the whole, decided on Milwaukee. And then there was displeasure with it. When it went when they went to ask the, who voted for Milwaukee, they couldn't find anybody who voted for Milwaukee. That was so sort of funny. But at any rate, so now they've reversed that and said it's got to be Chicago. Chicago, as they say, is the global city. Well, I got arguments this long why it should go to Indianapolis. But then, but that was the one item that I think people picked on and saying, well, the CNLC probably was not doing its best there. And I think that it's a selection in Chicago because it is a well-known global city, and being the transportation center that it is will turn out really fine. But it, that was the one time they were a little vulnerable. Any other comments or questions on this? Well, tomorrow what we want to look at is to see the structure that and the design of the New Lutheran Church and how we fit into that. Will the congregations fit into that? What a synod will be, how it will fit in, the various commissions and committees that will be a part of the New Lutheran Church. If you go wandering through the bookstore, this is available, but it's not at no cost, so it's free. So you may pick it up, and it will contain a considerable of the material that we'll be talking about tomorrow. So if you'd like to get an advanced look at that or bring one along tomorrow, that would be helpful. What I would like to have now is to have your cards if you did get to express your fears and your hopes. And if some of you have not done so and would like to do that, we'd be glad to hear from you. You can turn that into me.